lyrics are.
It's game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh!
End of line.
This is Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast, and I was able to sit down with Mr. John Lighthouser, the new Mutants and Masterminds line developer for the last several months, at Green Ronin Publishing, of course. Now, he let slip a few things about Mutants and Masterminds 3rd Edition and, the, of course, the upcoming DC Universe, or the DC Adventures role-playing game, all coming out from Green Ronin Publishing. Now, I know a lot of people are very excited about this stuff coming out, and I know I am very excited about the DC Adventures role-playing game that's coming out. So, sit back and enjoy a very fun interview. I had a real good time talking to John. And we'll see what secrets he lets out of the bag.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. Huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com. Or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
This is the Vorpal Network.
This is Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast, and I'm here to tell you about CantCon. For those of us who can't con, there's CantCon. CantCon will be held at the Johnson County Community College Regnier Center in Overland Park, Kansas, in the Capitol Federal Conference Room on July 9th through the 11th between 8 a.m. and 10 p.m. There will be RPG events, board game events, card game events, miniatures games, as well as open gaming tables for impromptu sessions. Pre-registration is open currently, and if you pre-register, you'll receive an additional chance to win swag at CantCon. We have over $2,500 worth of prizes to give away over the course of the convention, and we hope to give it all away. In addition, if you pre-register, you can get a 3-day pass for only $25. If you're only interested in coming one day at a time, you can for only $10 a day. There will be registration available at the door, but you'll have less of a chance to win free prizes that way. Join us at Johnson County Community College for CantCon on July 9th through the 11th, from beginning at 8 a.m. daily. Visit www.cantcon.com for more information. This is Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast, and I am here with Mr. John Lighthouser. And I hope I pronounced that right.
Got it in one, you bet.
Excellent, excellent. I gotta say, I cheated, though, so I I was told how to pronounce it by, I think, Steve Kenson, amongst others. So
I see.
There we go. I wouldn't want to try to pronounce that without any kind of coaching. So for everyone out there, it's Lighthouser. All right.
There you go.
How are you doing today, sir?
Great, doing very well.
You are not at Origins right now, according to what you told me. So
unfortunately, not at Origins. No.
I guess you guys probably have a bigger presence, like something like Gen Con, then.
Yeah, definitely at Gen Con we have more people show up. It's more of it's classically been more of a business show, at least for Green Ronin. Certainly in my past, the show I've always wanted to go to and wanted to be at during the summer is Gen Con. And that's mostly because I grew up about 10 miles from Lake Geneva and then went to Gen Con when it was at the UW Parkside in Racine, I think, and then went through it in Milwaukee for years and years and years. And
yeah.
Was very sad when it moved to Indianapolis.
Oh, I remember when it did that. That was, how many years ago was that now?
It's got to be about 10.
Almost 10, if not 10. I want to say it was around 2000, 2001, something like that, but...
Yeah, I think actually 2001, 2002 may have been the last year it was in at Mecca, but anyway, it was somewhere in that time range.
Yeah, I just remember the first year I went was the last year that it was in the old convention center, and then the next year it was in the Midwest Express one, the brand new one.
Yep.
And I remember Kenzer and company like went and stole a bunch of bricks or something like that.
Yeah, from the old Mecca building. Uh-huh. Yeah,
I vaguely remember that.
Yep.
All right, let's see.
Yep.
Well, let's sort of get some of my initial questions out of the way. How'd you get into gaming in general, into the hobby?
When I was but a wee lad, I was always a big comic book fan from about the time I was 10. And then a whole 2 years later, my next door neighbor, Dave, he and I started gaming together. And he started me off light with some board games, and then weeks later, months later, something like that, he was like, "Hey, you want to try this Dungeons and Dragons game?" And this was 1982, so it was not a very old game at the time.
Right.
And we started playing D&D, and we played Gamma World, and we played Top Secret, and we played Villains and Vigilantes. Sorry. The Marvel superheroes game, we played the DC heroes game, like everything under the sun, some Palladium, just all sorts of stuff.
Did you find that you did more superhero gaming than the fantasy stuff, or did you just sort of do the whole gamut about the same?
We pretty much did everything, but we definitely fell into the camp of we both liked fantasy, and we both liked superheroes, although I was a much bigger superhero guy than he was.
Mm-hmm. Well, coming from a comic book background, you sort of find yourself in the in a ideal spot right now as the line developer for Mutants and Masterminds.
Yeah, that's worked out really well, and in fact, I've been really pretty lucky all along. Growing up, I was such a fanboy when it came to comics and gaming, and then when I got to college, I fell in with a group of really fantastic guys to hang out with and game with at the UW-Madison Memorial Union and Union South, and we played, I can't even tell you how many hours and hours of Champions in college. Mm-hmm. Just ridiculous number of hours. And then right after college, I got a job at a comic book store, and then I got a job at the comic book distribution company, and then I started my own publishing company, and then I went to work for WizKids and was the HeroClix game designer there, and now my day job is working at Cryptic Studios. I was doing work on the Champions game, but now I'm working on an unannounced project and working at Green Ronin on the side.
Excellent. Now, you mentioned you started up your own publishing company. What was that?
Corsair Publishing. Corsair. We published Dork Tower for the first 8 issues, and published Harry Elmore's... I got to remember the name now. That I'm not going to remember it. It was a role-playing game. It got taken over by Don Perrin and... Margaret Weiss's company in the early 2000s.
Yeah, I just had...
Sovereign Stone.
Sovereign Stone. I just had someone on here talking about that, so yeah. Sovereign Stone.
Yep. So I published Sovereign Stone for the first year or so, published Dark Tower for the first year or so, published a little kind of now would be considered an indie game called Sketch, where you drew your character and everybody voted on what it was. And
I actually remember that. I actually picked up a copy of that at Gen Con when it came out.
Yeah, I love that game. I absolutely love it. In fact, one of the guys who wrote a lot of Heroes and Villains volumes, well, 1 and 2, is Seth Johnson, and he's the guy who created that game, and mm-hmm. I encouraged him to flesh it out a little bit more. He and another guy who actually works at Fantasy Flight grew up next door to each other, and they always wanted to make a game that had, like, your character drawing was what you based your character off of, mm-hmm. and I was like, that's a fantastic idea, we should do that.
Yeah, it was one of those games that we picked up, but it's one of those games I picked up at Gen Con, we never actually ever got to play the thing, but it looked really cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
Cool. You also mentioned that you went and did some work for WizKids doing their HeroClix stuff. What can you tell us about that?
That was a good time. I really enjoyed it. I actually got hired in the fall of 2001 to be their to work in their marketing department. And pretty much shortly after starting, walked into the head game designer's department and said, I want your job. And that was the right thing to do because he was a great guy and started having me give him feedback on the rules. And
I was going to say, you both then had a fight to the death?
Yeah, actually it worked out well because he got promoted and he promoted me right after him. And so I think within a year or two of telling him that, I had his job and then went on to become even more senior in the company. And it was a great time. I mean, I loved working on the HeroClix stuff. I loved mm-hmm. the people I worked with at WizKids, and then all of our volunteers and everybody. It was just a blast. It was a great time.
Right. What exactly did you work on as far as the HeroClix stuff? I'm asking out of personal curiosity because I love the HeroClix stuff myself.
I did. So I didn't do the very first set, which was the DC set. Mm-hmm. But I changed a couple of those characters very minorly, and then almost everything from there on out until... And I say almost everything mm-hmm. until 2005 sometime, probably mid to three quarters of the way through 2005 was pretty much all my stuff. Like, I did all those characters.
Very cool. Very cool. So basically you were doing it around the time when I was into it. So
yeah, probably if you were into it fairly early,
Explosion and Hyper Time. Yep. Those yep. are sort of around the time when I got into it for a bit. So now I'm yep. getting back into it now that it's coming out again. So,
yep, those are all my sets. That's for sure.
Very cool. Very cool.
And I name most of them too. So,
the actual names of the lines. Nice.
Yeah, it was one of those things that they would just say, "We need to name this. What are we going to send in?" And I was like, "Clobbering Time." Like, whatever. Yep. Everybody was like, sounds good, we'll, yeah.
Excellent. Now, you also mentioned that your day job is working with Cryptic Studios, and obviously you can't talk about what you're working on with them right now. I understand that. But you did work on the Champions online game. What can you tell us about that experience?
That was also really nice. it was... I was actually hired there. I seem to get hired to do things and then get moved over into other things, but I was hired there to do a different sort of game that they were going to include with Champions, and then that ended up getting kind of absorbed into mm-hmm. the full Champions game. And so I was doing content design pretty much like just like a month or so before the game launched. And then afterwards for... Oh, probably a good 6-8 months, and now I'm over on this new project. But it was great. It was a great learning experience. It was, you know, working with a team I hadn't worked with before, and I actually moved from Seattle down to San Jose or Los Gatos, California, to work with them, and it was very good. It was a lot of fun, a lot of writing, a lot of figuring out how to use new tools and build missions, and you know, that sort of good stuff.
Okay. Well, now that you've worked on, obviously you've worked on some role-playing stuff, some miniatures games with the HeroClix and also with the computers. Is there any kind of difference in the way that you work with those or the design challenges, anything like that?
Certainly there's a different way to attack everything. I don't know specifically how I'd characterize each of them. Certainly the work I'm doing now at Cryptic is much more technical, whereas the work I did even for the role-playing game companies was it's much I hate to say looser, but it's more words, I think is the best way to put it. And always when you're dealing with lots and lots of words, it's kind of more work and less work at the same time. One of the things I learned at WizKids was to write really tightly, because we needed to have really short rule books.
Mm-hmm.
And then to make that transition back over to role-playing was actually kind of tricky, because I was always trying to keep things really short and really concise, and that's not exactly what people are looking for from a 120-page book on
sure.
Iron Age or whatever. So mm-hmm. So there are definite differences, and it really depends on who you're writing for and what you're writing, and it's been kind of all over the place.
Cool. Now, how did you end up sort of getting into the business with Green Ronin? How did you end up becoming one of those crazy guys?
Let's see. I moved out to Seattle in about 2001, and I had previously worked with Chris Primus at when I was working for Capital City Distribution, which was Diamond's biggest competitor at the time in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of knew Chris from some phone calls, and then I didn't really know anybody when I got out to Seattle, and Chris and his wife, Nicole, who are two of the owners of Green Ronin, were kind enough to invite me to their wedding convention, which was, I think, about a year after they actually got married, but they had a get-together, just like a party, and they called it, like, you know, and a lot of their friends were gamers, and so it kind of turned into a gaming convention. And wedding reception sort of thing. And while I was there, I was talking to some of the guys, and I said, oh yeah, I love doing stat blocks. It's just fun. Like, I enjoy doing the math, and I think it's really neat to, like, see how all the powers have worked out and, like, mm-hmm. calculating all the costs. And they said, that's the hardest thing we have to do, and that's, like, why our books are always late, is because nobody wants to edit them, and the stat blocks are really hard. And I was like, hey, send them my way. I'd love to do it. I got nothing but time, because I didn't know anybody. And so I started doing some editing for them. And obviously, I'd previously done writing and editing and,
sure.
you know, work for my own company. And so, sure enough, they hired me to do some editing, and they were really happy with the results. And I think the first big book that I edited was the second edition rule book.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I did something before that. In fact, I'm sure I did. But so there was quite a bit of work that started coming my way. And then, a year and a half ago, Chris called me up and said, hey, Steve Kenson wants to go back to doing more design work and not do so much development work. He enjoys fingers on keyboards more than he enjoys coordinating people and trying to get work mm-hmm. out of people, that sort of thing, sending out contracts. And I said, hey, sounds great. I would absolutely be interested in doing that. And so I've been doing that now for about a year and a half. And I think... in fact, it might even be 2 years now.
Cool. What exactly, that sort of brings up a question I have is, for our listeners, what exactly does a line developer do?
Yeah, that is a good question. So I'm sure it's slightly different at every game company,
sure.
but what I end up doing is all the front-end work and some of the back-end work in mm-hmm. in the parlance. So I don't do the actual writing. I don't do necessarily the game stats, but I do go through and make sure everything is jiving with what Steve and I kind of have as a vision for what the line is and where it should be going.
Mm-hmm.
So when I get in a manuscript, like, well, the biggest one recently has been the DC books. So when DC Adventures came in, which Steve wrote, I actually edited that because we didn't have an editor that was kind of our go-to person at that moment, and the people that we really wanted to do it just weren't available. And so I ended up doing it, and then it's really, it's finding those people and making sure we have the right people to fill each slot. So we have an editor, we have a writer, we have a proofreader, or a number of proofreaders, we have playtesters, we're getting information, you know, I'm getting files ready to send to the playtesters so they can actually play games, and I get NDAs signed for everybody, non-disclosure agreements, and then when I, you know, I contract the people who are going to do the writing, and it's a lot of administrative work, but it's also, in the case, well, really in all of these, it's a lot of creative work too, because I end up having to kind of keep all of this information in my head, and you know, knowing what the rules are like, knowing what the fans are wanting, and then trying to make that all sort of make sense when the book finally comes out.
Sure, sure. And that, of course, brings us to the, obviously, you're the line developer on Mutants and Masterminds. That brings us to some of the really cool stuff that's been going on with Mutants and Masterminds that's we've talked about on the show a few times, and obviously we've talked to Steve Kenson and Chris Pramus about it, and I'm interested to hear your side of the whole story as far as, obviously, DC Heroes, and sort of what role, if any, did you have in that?
DC Adventures, first off.
DC Adventures. I keep doing that. I am so sorry. Gosh, I did that the Chris Pramus interview, too.
Yeah, he complained to me about that. He was like, don't give him an inch. So, sorry, what was your specific question there?
What was your role in the DC Heroes, and that whole, basically, the development on the DC Heroes, basically the licensing, all that sort of thing, is how it came about?
The how it came about was really out of my hands. Okay. When I first got hired, so keep in mind this was, and I think it was 2 years ago. So 2 years ago, we sat down for a meeting, I think in September, and we're going through and planning out the next year's worth of stuff. And like just out of the blue, Chris says, well, and then there's the DC thing. And I was like, what? Excuse me?
Oh?
he's like, oh, yeah, we've been talking to DC for months now because Chris and Nicole and I think some of the other Ronins as well are good friends with Ray Wininger. And Ray actually did have a hand in the old DC Heroes stuff back in, you know, from Mayfair, I think it was. In fact, wrote a Watchmen book, which has stuff in there that doesn't appear anywhere else, which is kind of interesting.
Cool.
So they had been working through Ray to talk to DC about maybe doing a DC book using the Mutants and Masterminds game. And it literally took more than 2 years to get done. And partially it was... this year was DC's 75th anniversary, and so they kind of want to be everywhere. So they want to have a big push, and you know, be known for the company that has everything out there. And you know, you've got Superman, you've got Batman, you've got Wonder Woman, you've got Green Lantern, you know, the comics are kind of riding high at the moment. That was basically it. I mean, it was a lot of back and forth and a lot of slow emails and a lot of just, okay, we've talked to some people and looked into the industry, and sure enough, your name keeps coming up a lot as the people to do if you're going to do superheroes, and so we were happy to hear that.
Yeah.
And, it was, DC is a fantastic company, and I've worked with them before at HeroClix, and they're very together, very upfront, very professional, and I mean, really, you couldn't ask for like a better group of people to be putting out product for or with.
That's awesome. Now, what was it like to be able to? I mean, because now you did it a little bit with HeroClix, and now you're doing it again with Mutants and Masterminds. What's it like to be able to play around in that kind of a sandbox like the DC Universe and be able to interact, more or less interact with those, you know, iconic characters that we all know?
Yeah, it's been pretty much as cool as you would think. Like I said, I've been a comic fan for a long time, and it's been really great to be able to have a hand in sort of getting the characters right to present to people. So if you want to play a DC game using the DC Adventures rules, you know, you're gonna want the characters to reflect what they're like in the comics, and that's really been sort of our goal all along. Is we want them to feel like they're right. And you know, I did a lot of work when I got all the stuff in, all the character write-ups in on this first Heroes and Villains Volume 1.
Right.
Did a lot of work on making sure the stat blocks were reflecting the characters accurately, given what the rest of the characters were written up like, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
And I'm sure there's going to be things that, you know, I did wrong or fell through the cracks or whatever. And in fact, we just had a character that I know I'm going to have to rewrite a little bit in the Batman family. But it was really interesting. And, you know, we had some great people working on this, people that we've had from, you know, Christopher McLaughlin, who's done a lot of work for Mutants and Masterminds products in the past.
And a former guest on our show.
And probably, yes, he gets around. And we've also had, a number of other people who have put out Superlink products in the past. So Mutants and Masterminds Superlink, which is sort of our open license for people to be able to put out products.
Which is, of course, changing once the new edition comes out.
Yeah, yeah. As of, I think, the 1st of 2011, it will be super-powered by M&M. And... yeah, it's going to be, you know, pulled on some of those people to get them to do write-ups for us, and then also pulled from some of the fan base, too, guys who have done some work for us or who have wanted to do work for us and gave them a shot on this, and really, I was not disappointed. People did a great job.
Cool. Now, as I understand it, you have the DC Adventures role-playing game that's coming out has... four books scheduled for it under the current license, right?
Yep.
Now, was that something that was decided on early to have four books, or is it that sort of a late in the process? And did you have any trouble sort of narrowing down what those books were going to be?
It was decided, I think, fairly early on, and I think it was agreed upon by both DC and by us that we were happy to have the DC license because, just because it's great, first off, but because we knew it would open up some doors for us too, and we've worked. I shouldn't even say we, right? But Green Ronin has worked on some great licensed products in the past, and. This is really just kind of another feather in our cap. So it was great to have the opportunity. And then the how to choose which four books to do. Really, I think we only kind of decided that about a year or so ago, a little more, when we all sat down and said, okay, what do we want to do? Like, how do we get the kind of biggest bang for these four books, like what makes the most sense? And obviously the first one had to be a rule book.
Sure.
It had to include a little bit of world information so that, you know, if you only wanted to pick up this one book, you can play the game, you know, it's the DC universe, you have I think 14 heroes and 14 villains in the back of the book that you can kind of look at and be like, okay, yeah, this is Superman, this is Green Lantern, this is the Flash, you know, you've got everybody there. And of course I not sure if the Flash is actually in that main rule book, but
he is.
Is he? Okay, yeah. That's right. I sent you the rules, didn't I?
Mm-hmm.
And
I finished reading them today. So.
Oh. And then we kind of went round and round on a couple of other options of like how to attack things, and you know, previously in Mutants and Masterminds, we've done these age books: Iron Age, Silver Age, Golden Age. And then we've done like villain collections and things like that. And we kind of figured the best thing to do would really be to just give people characters, because that's really what they want. Everybody's going to be familiar enough with the setting, the DC universe, because they probably are reading the comics. And so we don't really need to tell them too much about that. And really, if we can cram a whole bunch of characters into a couple of books and get those out the door, that's going to save people from writing up I would say all but the most obscure of characters.
Sure.
And then and that's two volumes. And then the fourth book was going back to the world setting. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be the DC Adventures Universe book. Mm-hmm. And it's all about the fourth world and time and space and cities on Earth and characters who populate these places and some of the a little more obscure characters that, you know, you would look at the Heroes and Villains volumes and say, oh, I really wanted to see Director Bones, and I really wanted to see Cameron Chase, and I really wanted to see this character and that character, and mm-hmm. and that's where those guys will show up. So
cool. The now just aesthetically talking aesthetics, I think you guys have released images of the first two book covers, and they're done by obviously the brilliant artist Alex Ross. Mm-hmm. Is it the plan for him to do all the covers for you guys?
Yeah, and in fact, we have all four of them mocked up.
Nice.
But yeah, we're not showing anybody yet.
Well, yeah. Please, you gotta let it, you know, trickle out. That's fine.
Exactly. and really, honestly, we've got quite a while before all four books are out mm-hmm. the door. So, you know, right. it wouldn't be good to get too much stuff out there early. But we were kind of experimenting with, like, what do we want the covers to look like and who would be good. And, mm-hmm. you know, we considered for a while not using Alex Ross because so much of his stuff does get used and sure. reused. And it really came down to, yeah, but it looks so damn good when we kind of yeah. lay it out. And now, and it really looks
is great. Is he actually doing original pieces for you guys, or is it stuff he's already done before?
It's all stuff that's already done before.
Okay. So I didn't know. So.
Yeah, DC has opened their vault to us.
That's fantastic.
And so we're kind of able to go through, and if we have to give them very specific information of what sure. we want, so they can go and get that specific image. But yeah, pretty much anything that's been published in the last 10 years, we could request, and nice. They have it ready for us
cool.
really pretty quickly. So
excellent. And the again, back to some aesthetics, can we expect all four books to be the hardcover full color books?
Yeah, I think absolutely for the four core mm-hmm. DC books, absolutely.
Excellent. And the first book, last I talked to Famous Primus, as he said, yes, is we're hoping for the DC Heroes Handbook to come out for Gen Con, right?
Yeah, I think it's more than a hope. I think it's a directive. It's a command from on high,
sure.
and all of us have definitely taken it to heart. So
I know I'll be there, money in hand, waiting for a copy. So
yeah, it's really going to be, and it's going to be tight because we're still working on everything.
Sure.
But it's it's looking really good. In fact, I just yesterday or the day before got a copy of the PDF of the current layout from Hal Mangold, who does all of our production work and art
cool.
direction. And it's not finished,
right?
But it's in a stage now that we can go through and do a whole bunch of proofing and get Hal a mm-hmm. bunch of corrections. And that is very good for everybody because that means the book will soon be done.
Soon be off to the printers and all that.
Yeah, soon be off to the printers, and I think even before that, it's going to have to get vetted by DC again just to
sure.
have look at it and go, yep, you're using everything correctly, and good to go, send it to the printer. So as soon as we can get it up for sale on the store,
right.
it will be up for sale on the store. So.
And when can we expect the next book in the series? Do we have a general release time for that yet?
I know we do. In fact, I just this week we were talking about schedules and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I am
aiming for like the end of the year, basically.
Yes, I believe it is before the end of the year the first Heroes and Villains book will be out on the shelves, and exactly where that is or
sure.
when that is, I don't recall exactly.
It end of the year, we're happy with that. So
yeah, I'll be very happy when that
money. Now, stepping away from DC Heroes, or the DC the DC Adventures game, there I go again, DC Adventures game, I'm going to change it right here in my little note here, DC Adventures, there we go.
We also call it just DCA, we call it.
DCA, DC, and that's awesome, that really is cool. The stepping away from DC Adventures, obviously, is just the generic Mutants and Masterminds line, and you guys have soft cover, just rules-only book coming out later this year as well, I think around October or something like that.
Yep.
And obviously, we can. I'm hoping, obviously, we can expect more, more from that. Obviously, so.
Yeah.
What is there anything sort of on the horizon for Mutants and Masterminds that you can talk about, or that you can drop sort of a tantalizing clue about?
Well, I don't want to get too far out. But yeah, I think this fall we're going to be doing the Mutants and Masterminds Heroes Handbook. Mm-hmm. That I am going to try very hard to make sure that the guts of that book are pretty much exactly the same as the DC Adventures book.
Right.
And, you know, who knows, we'll probably have time to catch some more typos and things like that and get sure. that adjusted. But I don't want to have really even minor changes to the rules rolled mm-hmm. into that because I want it to be the same book as DC so that people can work off of either book and they're both getting the same information.
Right.
I don't know if that'll actually happen, but that's my hope. I don't want to make anybody's DC Adventures book obsolete when the Mutants and Masterminds Heroes Handbook comes out, because that's mm-hmm. that's not fair, and
right.
that's not what I want to do. Now I hope people buy both of them, but that's only because I get, you know, a check every month from Green Ronin. So.
Well, I'll be buying both of them. So I mean, so you don't need to sell me on that notion.
Yeah.
I look at the hardcover DC one, that's my book, and the other book is for my players to paw through.
That is a fine idea, actually. You know, it's weird because we hadn't even thought of that, but that's probably actually a good tack to take on mm-hmm. trying to sell it to people. So, but anyway, yeah, we're very conscious of that, and we kind of went round and round on, like, you know, we're going to have DC Adventures out, and how quickly do we want to follow that up with mm-hmm. with the M&M book? And we didn't want it to be too fast, but at the same time, we know there's people out there who are going to be like, I don't want to spend, and I don't know the exact price, $40 or $50 on a hardcover role-playing game book. I want just a soft cover, give me the rules, and mm-hmm. I'll make up my own game. So I think we hit a good time period afterward, but I don't know exactly how it's going to sure. all play out. So.
Is the plan to put out the four DC Adventures books and sort of intersperse in there with general Mutants and Masterminds material as well? Not in yep. those books, but other books as well that are just general Mutants and Masterminds?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And we've got some pretty cool plans for the first handful of books for Mutants and Masterminds, and then... in fact, the thing I really need to get started on is sort mm-hmm. of a big project we're going to do next spring and summer, which will culminate in a cool release for Gen Con next year. And it, again, that's the plan right now, but what we're talking about should be pretty fun, and hopefully we'll have some things wrapped up for that in the next couple of months that we can talk more about it. But yeah, it's going to be pretty cool, and it's a different thing that we haven't really done before at all. I shouldn't even say really done. We've never done anything like this before, but you know, our goal is to kind of draw the community in a bit closer and get everybody kind of on the same page in terms of.
Sure. So it sounds like what you guys are planning on sort of looking at as far as the Mutants and Masterminds stuff is not sort of going back over the old stuff and sort of trying to do some new and innovative things.
Yeah, and actually that was specifically what we wanted to do, mm-hmm. or what we didn't want to do. We didn't want to repackage the stuff that we had come out with
sure.
in first or second edition and say, here, buy this stuff again. Isn't it awesome?
Right, so we shouldn't be expecting, like, you know, an Iron Age and a Silver Age and a Golden Age books specifically for third edition.
Right, correct, yeah. We may do something like that eventually, but for at least the next year, that is not on the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And I would guess even beyond that,
sure.
we really, I, I have been a gamer for a long time, and so has Steve, and so has Chris, and everybody at Green Ronin, and we know how annoying that can be to repurchase the same stuff over and over, and we don't want to do that.
I can attest, at least since I've read the new book, that you can still use the old stuff with it. You just have to convert it a bit, and the source material is still perfectly fine.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we discussed when we were sitting around a table. Is we said, this information is still all here, and if somebody wanted to be hardcore and sit down and convert all the characters, it wouldn't be very hard. It would take time because you're writing stuff out and whatever, but it's not hard to use second edition characters in third edition.
And are there any sort of tentative plans as far as that's concerned for maybe some PDF support for that?
Yeah, that's actually one of the big things we're talking about, is how we can take advantage of the PDF.
Sort of along the lines with what you guys did with Crooks for second edition.
Yeah, and we haven't really looked specifically at, if this is what you were talking about, like converting Silver Age over into third edition and releasing it only as a PDF. We're not really considering that.
I'm very much interested in the Freedom City stuff, because I've run Freedom City stuff before. So,
well, then I think you will be happy in the next year or so, because we're not gonna be re-releasing. Mm-hmm. At least the idea right now is that we will not be re-releasing Freedom City itself as a setting. But we might be expanding the Freedom City universe.
Very cool. That sounds awesome. Sounds very cool. Looking at wrapping things up here shortly, is there anything sort of on the horizon, whether it's Mutants Masterminds, whether it's Green Ronin, really sort of anything on the horizon that that you are excited about or you want us to get excited about?
Really the biggest thing is the DC stuff. I'm ready for the DC Adventures Heroes Handbook to be out. That's for sure. I want it to get into people's hands.
It's on the top of my Gen Con list right now. So I mean,
yeah.
I find that at Gen Con sometimes there are, and it hasn't happened in recent years, but there's usually, in years past, this is the big thing to buy at Gen Con, and for me at least, that's going to be the DC Adventures.
Yeah, and you say that as someone who's just finished the rules, right? Like, you've read through everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's good to hear.
Oh, yeah. It's basically the best way I can describe it, and I'll do a full review of it for the show, it's all the good Mutants and Masterminds stuff. It's Mutants and Masterminds, therefore it's awesome, and it's also got the DC stuff in there, which makes it more awesome, so... Really,
even better.
You can't lose.
Yeah. Steve and I are certainly very happy with how everything's come together. But then the next thing, and this is kind of a no-brainer too, that I'm really excited to get out the door is the first volume of the Heroes and Villains books. I think these are just going to be
Heroes and Villains
the
books
most
are always,
fun.
Always tons of fun to pull through. So.
It's going to be great, and I'm really happy with how the characters turned out. They all have good background information. They have if somebody's not familiar with a specific character, there's a description of their personality. There's a description of their allies and their enemies and their background. And it's not necessarily a ton of words, right? Like 300, 600, maybe 1,000 words, something like that. But it really does encapsulate. We've got 300 different stat blocks in the first volume alone, and we're probably going to have about the same number in the second volume. Nice. And I'm really excited to get this in front of people and see what they have to say about it. So,
and how did you guys sort of tackle narrowing down who to put in those books?
it wasn't even a matter necessarily of like narrowing it down. It was about like how wide do we want the scope to be?
Do we want this to be as big as the Physician's Desk reference?
Yeah, exactly. Because we have this whole huge universe, right? But of the thousands of characters, it must be in the DC universe, like how many of those do we really want to do? And I guess the answer is about 600, but it, you know, it was kind of like how far do we open that box and you know, what do we dig out? Like mm-hmm. we've got, you know, Orion is in the main rule book, and okay, so we don't want to include a lot of new gods because they could, you know, fill up a lot of the book, but sure. So Orion and Big Barda, but then Light Ray will probably be in the
Orion
universe.
Has Orion been added because he's not in the playtest copy?
You have the Hero's Handbook. I'm talking about...
Okay, you're talking that one. All right. I'm good.
Yeah, the Heroes and Villains book.
My brain is starting to function again. All right.
But yeah, so there's a lot of... Oh, and Mr. Miracle. And so mm-hmm. it's really just a matter of, you know, figuring out exactly how far we want to, you know, turn on the hose and sure. get all those characters to fit in the book, so...
And brace yourself for the people who are like, what do you mean you didn't give Skeet stats or something like that?
Oh, no. Skeets has stats.
Excellent.
He's all written up. Booster Gold has stats. Gold Star, not in the book. Sorry. Yeah, that's all right. I'm sure she'll be a fun one to write up for somebody. So
yes.
But yeah, there's a ton of characters. There's three different versions of the Blue Beetle. There's a number. Yeah. A number, and in fact, we may be able to get John Rogers, the guy who created the new Blue Beetle, or one of the creators of the new Blue Beetle, and the guy behind who wrote Core and wrote the first Transformers movie, or one version of the Transformers movie, and wrote and is the mind behind the TV show Leverage.
Right.
Is hopefully going to be writing something for us for that volume, and. So yeah, we're hoping to try and pull in a couple of people from the comics business to, you know, write some forewords and afterwards and introductions and things like that, just because it's
you guys have always sort of tried to do something things like that with Mutants and Masterminds in general, I've noticed. It's always had a very good marriage of those two universes, so
yeah, I think it's I don't know if that's a conscious thing on the company's part, but everybody at the company is pretty much a geek, so
sure. No,
you know,
really?
if we have an excuse to go search out a comic book writer, we're gonna use that excuse as much as we can, so it's you know, that's not too surprizing.
Very cool. Well, when was the last time that you had a chance to sit down and roll some dice? Do you get to play regularly, or do you run something?
Yes to both. We just wrapped up a Deadlands game a while ago, and then I have been on that same Tuesday night slot. I started running a third edition M&M game, or cool. I guess a DC Adventures, because that's
odd.
The rule book.
I'm gonna be my Deadlands game is going to be wrapping up soon, and then we're doing DC third.
Oh well, there you go.
There we go.
But yeah, so we just wrapped up that Deadlands game, and now I'm running a DC Adventures game, and unfortunately one guy just got a new job and moved away, and another guy was on vacation for a couple of weeks, and another guy's in deadline hell, and so it's been a little iffy the last, like, 2-3 weeks, but we've still played, I think, 3 or 4 sessions already, and it's been going pretty well. It's been a lot of fun, and... they are not familiar with the Mutants and Masterminds rules for the most part, and so it's been a learning experience for them, and they're enjoying themselves, and they are gamers, so they get the concept, they know what's going on, but yeah, this was all very new to them, and they're having a great time with it. So
very cool.
And the other thing, sorry, I was just going to say, the other thing that was really cool about that was the woman that we game with, Kate is her name, she came up and said, hey, I want to play somebody like Batgirl. And I said, which version of Batgirl would you like to play? And went and dug through the Heroes and Villains book and found a version she liked. And she was like, yeah, this looks great. And can we change this and this and this? And I said, absolutely. And so we literally changed, you know, 4 things on the character sheet, and she was done with her character.
Very cool. Excellent. I think that's part of what's awesome about those big character books and the villain books is it's like, you know, I need a dude for them to fight. This guy.
Yeah,
I'll
yeah,
change
exactly.
His name and add this and take this away, and it'll be fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, these are like some of the biggest monster manuals you'll have ever seen. So.
Yeah, and the with these new rules, I think it's actually going to be easier to drop stuff and add stuff. I think. And It wasn't necessarily impossible in the last versions. It could get kind of crunchy, but in this one, I think it's going to be a lot easier.
Yeah, and especially for bad guys, right? Because you can just pick a power and say, he's got this, and he's got it at rank 10 instead of rank 12, and all the advantages are the same, and I'll just write that on his character sheet, and then I'm going to give him this power and this power, and he's got some flight, and he can fly 250 miles an hour, and okay, I'm ready to go.
Excellent.
And yeah, I think it's gonna be really good.
Very cool. Well, one thing that the Gamers Haven is sort of all about is basically spreading the love of the hobby and, you know, talking to people about why the hobby is so great. And my last question for you is, what is it about this hobby that you love?
It's probably two things, really, and I'm sure they're related. I like that gaming is fun. And that sounds like a silly thing, but even though I have spent probably the last 15 years in some way working for or working with game company, and whether I'm doing editing or, you know, not necessarily getting contracts signed, but, you know, doing editing or playing a game, I enjoy it entirely, like, way too much. And then really, it's the social aspect of it. I have, you know, my best friends from high school and college, definitely grew out of gaming and my gaming groups. And, you know, they're all over the country now, and I'm out in Seattle and down in Los Gatos, California. And even so, we talk regularly, and, you know, we're not doing any gaming together right now, but, you know, we're always together one way or another and talking to each other and emailing each other, and it all grew out of gaming. So I give a lot of props to my my geeky habits, because that's the stuff we all enjoy, and that's why we're all doing it.
All right, very cool. Well, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your obviously you've got a lot going on, so thanks for taking the time to talk to us over here at the Gamers Haven.
Yeah, you bet. Yep, when I get off right now, I'm going to go do some proofing on the DC Adventures rulebook. So
this podcast is brought to you by FRP Games, an online retailer specializing in all kinds of gaming products. Please visit www.forplenetwork.com in order to gain access to thousands of unique items available only at FRP Games. Been listening to the Gamers Haven podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. You can also call us toll-free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll-free 877-416-1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.